This is special coverage from NPR News on today's terrorist attacks. I'm Linda Wertheimer.
And I'm Noah Adams. To bring us up to date on the extent of the deaths and the injuries, we turn now to NPR's Rick Carr, who is in New York. Rick, can we put any number now, this evening, on the number of possible dead and injured in New York and also in Washington at the Pentagon and in the airplane crash in Pennsylvania?
Well, I'll start with the airplanes, Noah. We know that there were 266 people in total on those four aircraft. The first aircraft to hit the World Trade Center was American Airlines Flight 11. It was a Boeing 767. There were 92 people aboard. The second aircraft to hit was United Airlines Flight 175. Again, a 767, 65 people on board. In Washington, the plane that hit the Pentagon was American Airlines Flight 77. It's a 757, and there were 64 people aboard, and the downed plane in Pennsylvania was United Airlines Flight 93, and it had 45 people aboard.
Now, we're hearing that this evening late that hundreds of firefighters and police who were sent early to the World Trade Center in New York are now missing, and entire companies of firefighters.
That's right. A spokesperson for the Firefighters Union here in New York has said that of the 400 firefighters who are on the scene, about half of them are now missing. He said that there are whole companies missing, there are chiefs missing. Nobody's really certain how many people are missing in the wreckage, whether it's firefighters, police, or indeed people who were in the World Trade Center buildings, because the dust is so thick down there. The destruction is so complete. There was a report that moved on the wires this afternoon that indicated that some people believe that emergency vehicles were actually driving over corpses that were buried in dust. There was just no way to tell how many people were there. There are reports now in New York that crews have gone into the area and are starting to look for survivors and for corpses.
We have been hearing throughout the afternoon the figure thousands who could be dead in the World Trade Tower bombing. What's your latest information?
The latest information is pretty much what we've been hearing all day long. It's educated guesswork at this point how many people there are. The New York Police Department has been saying this afternoon they estimate 10,000 or so people may have died in the explosions and in the collapse of the World Trade Center buildings. There are just too many questions right now about how many people had arrived. About more than 40,000 people work in those buildings. We don't know how many people had arrived at work. We don't know how many of them turned away when they saw the first explosion. We don't know how many of them successfully got out of the building after the first plane struck. We just don't know, and we won't really know until families around New York get a sense of who's actually returned home, the hospitals can coordinate information, and indeed that those crews can get in there and start trying to find any human remains that might be there.
And how are the hospitals dealing with this tragedy?
Well, there are 170 hospitals in New York City. They've all been put into action to take care of the wounded. We don't really have a sense of how many people there are in total that have been admitted to the hospitals, 600 or so as of this afternoon. Hospitals are reporting that 10 to 20% of those who are coming in are in critical condition, most of them suffering from cuts, scrapes, burns, and smoke and dust inhalation. The smoke and dust was just incredible, pouring over Lower Manhattan and into Brooklyn, where indeed it felt like it was snowing for much of the afternoon.
Thank you, Rick.
Thank you, Noah.
NPR's Rick Carr talking with us from New York.
With the death toll mounting from today's attacks, questions are mounting about who is responsible and when and how the U.S. might retaliate. We're joined now by Strobe Talbott, who was Deputy Secretary of State in the Clinton administration. Strobe Talbott, how does the United States go about determining who did this?
Quickly and carefully, without jumping to conclusions, but when we reach hard-headed judgments and we're sure of them, we have to act.
Well, act means many things. It could mean an international criminal investigation, as in the bombing at Khobar Towers in Saudi Arabia, or it could mean military retaliation. Would you assume at least military retaliation?
Yes, as long as we're sure that, first of all, the people we're retaliating against are indeed responsible, and second, that the retaliation will have a deterrent effect on the future. I mean, there is no question what the motive of the terrorists is here. It's to polarize. It's worse is better. It's to try to drive the United States either into its shell, which we cannot allow to happen, or to drive the United States into kind of lashing out in a way that will exacerbate exactly the sorts of tensions that terrorism feeds on. and we have to avoid both of those.
I mean, realistically speaking, can U.S. intelligence services figure out who did this without relying heavily on the intelligence services and police forces of countries in, say, the Middle East?
We have to look at this, as so many people have said during the course of the day, as an act of war, and we have to approach it as a kind of war. But we have to do it as we have done with wars in the past, as the leader of an alliance, the leader of a coalition of the civilized world. And we have to make sure that our coalition partners and our allies include not only the Europeans, but also, and by the way, the Russians, who for geographical and other reasons presumably have both interests and influence here, but also on the moderate Arab states.
I mean, what you're describing is a lot closer to what President George Bush the Elder organized in response to the invasion of Kuwait than, say, the attacks that followed the bombings of the U.S. embassies in Kenya and Tanzania during the Clinton administration.
Well, all of us who lived through the acts of terrorism during the Clinton administration have thought a lot during the day about the parallels there and also the differences. This is, for a number of reasons, different. In magnitude. In those earlier cases, we did rely, by the way, a lot on international cooperation, but that's going to be especially important now, given the essential fact here, Robert, which is that while we've all seen this as an attack on America, it's also an attack on the rest of the world. The consequences of what's happened today are going to be devastating for the international economy. Unless we can all gather together and put this into some kind of perspective and bring it under control. And that can only be done through multilateral international action led by the United States.
There's been much talk of suspicions that Osama bin Laden is behind all this. If he isn't, who else might be? Who's capable of doing such
a
thing?
Well, he obviously belongs high on the list of suspects for all sorts of reasons. And I can only speak here on the basis of what's been in the public eye today, which has been horrifying. It looks as though the degree of coordination here has to have something more than a non-governmental or individual actor or group behind it. But that's just a judgment that so many of us feel in our gut watching it. We can't rule anything out. We certainly have to take account of the possibility that there are states, that is, that the fault for this lies in national capitals as well as with terrorist organizations.
Strobe Talbott, thank you very much for talking with us. Strobe Talbott, who was Deputy Secretary of State in the Clinton administration and is now Director of the Center for the Study of Globalization at Yale University in New Haven.
From NPR News, this is special coverage of today's tragic events in New York City and here in Washington, D.C. I'm Noah Adams with colleagues Linda Wertheimer in Washington, Robert Siegel in New York. President Bush is expected to address the nation in about a minute. Earlier today, President Bush said, "Freedom has been attacked. Freedom will be defended."
NPR's White House correspondent Don Gagne is here as well. Don, do you expect the president to talk about some kind of response?
We expect him to talk about the fact that there will be a response and that the U.S. is committed and confident that it will find who is responsible and that there will be a response. But in terms of a specific response, they're still assessing the intelligence information they're receiving at this point.
We'll go immediately to the president as soon as he begins to speak. But first of all, could you tell us where he's been? Today.
He has been in Florida. He started his day, went to an air base in Louisiana, all as part of a precautionary move. He ended up in Nebraska outside Omaha at the Strategic Air Command before this evening, 7 o'clock, coming back to the White House, landing on the South Lawn and preparing for these remarks tonight.
The president will be speaking from the White House. Here is the president.
Good evening. Today, our fellow citizens, our way of life, our very freedom came under attack in a series of deliberate and deadly terrorist acts. The victims were in airplanes or in their offices, secretaries, businessmen and women, military and federal workers, moms and dads, friends and neighbors. Thousands of lives were suddenly ended by evil, despicable acts of terror. The pictures of airplanes flying into buildings, fires burning, huge structures collapsing, have filled us with disbelief, terrible sadness, and a quiet, unyielding anger. These acts of mass murder were intended to frighten our nation into chaos and retreat. But they have failed. Our country is strong. A great people has been moved to defend a great nation. Terrorist attacks can shake the foundations of our biggest buildings, but they cannot touch the foundation of America. These acts shatter steel, but they cannot dent the steel of American resolve. America was targeted for attack because we're the brightest beacon for freedom and opportunity in the world, and no one will keep that light from shining. Today, our nation saw evil, the very worst of human nature, and we responded with the best of America, with the daring of our rescue workers, with the caring for strangers and neighbors who came to give blood and help in any way they could. Immediately following the first attack, I implemented our government's emergency response plans. Our military is powerful, and it's prepared. Our emergency teams are working in New York City and Washington, D.C. to help with local rescue efforts. Our first priority is to get help to those who have been injured and to take every precaution to protect our citizens at home and around the world from further attacks. The functions of our government continue without interruption. Federal agencies in Washington, which had to be evacuated today, are reopening for essential personnel tonight and will be open for business tomorrow. Our financial institutions remain strong, and the American economy will be open for business as well. The search is underway for those who are behind these evil acts. I've directed the full resources of our intelligence and law enforcement communities to find those responsible and to bring them to justice. We will make no distinction between the terrorists who committed these acts and those who harbor them. I appreciate so very much the members of Congress who have joined me in strongly condemning these attacks. And on behalf of the American people, I thank the many world leaders who have called to offer their condolences and assistance. America and our friends and allies join with all those who want peace and security in the world, and we stand together to win the war against terrorism. Tonight, I ask for your prayers for all those who grieve, for the children whose worlds have been shattered, for all whose sense of safety and security has been threatened. And I pray they will be comforted by a power greater than any of us, spoken through the ages in Psalm 23. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I fear no evil, for you are with me. This is a day when all Americans from every walk of life unite in our resolve for justice and peace. America has stood down enemies before, and we will do so this time. None of us will ever forget this day, yet we go forward to defend freedom and all that is good and just in our world. Thank you. Good night, and God bless America.
President George Bush, speaking from the White House this evening, after a day which has seen the worst terrorist attacks in history occur in the United States, the World Trade Center destroyed, the Pentagon, part of the Pentagon destroyed. Don Gagne is here with us in the studio. Don, the president set this up as a conflict between good and evil, and in particularly in biblical terms, talking about the valley of the shadow of death. He talked about terrorism as a war and said that the United States would win the war against terrorism. He said that the United States has stood down enemies before. Very sort of militant kinds of prose from the president, but no plan? No specifics?
No specifics, because they don't feel prepared at all to offer any specifics yet. They are getting intelligence information. There are intercepted phone calls. They're getting intelligence reports of phone calls saying targets have been hit. But Ari Fleischer today, the president's press secretary, talking on Air Force One on the way back to Washington from Nebraska, told reporters that they have to be very careful that the information they have is accurate before any response is taken. But again, the president was attempting to show that once they come to that point, once there is a degree of certainty that that there will indeed be a very strong response, and he made the point tonight that no distinction between the terrorists, he said, who committed these acts and those who harbored them will be made. There will be no distinction, so they can all expect a response.
The president appeared to wish to reassure the American people that the government would be open for business, that financial institutions would remain strong.
The American economy will be open for business tomorrow. That was the second part of this speech, that the American way of life is not threatened, that life goes on here, that we will not retreat.
Don, it's hard to say how any administration could prepare for a day like this, but do you have the feeling that there was a confident reaction from the beginning, from the Bush White House? He was in several different places. He's come a little bit late to Washington to make this address tonight. What do you think?
It's hard to say. They were thrown by this like the rest of the country. He did make the point tonight that when they got the first report that the first plane had crashed into the one tower of the World Trade Center, that they put the emergency procedures into effect. But then, and perhaps it's the nature of something like this, the president was out of sight and out of touch for a good bit of the day, except for a very, very short statements that he made, one from Louisiana, one earlier in the day, very brief from Florida. The White House said that was all necessary as part of the caution that has to be taken while the national security team assesses the situation and the real threats. But they did feel compelled to have him make this national broadcast tonight.
Our colleague Robert Siegel is standing by in New York. Robert?
I was just, first of all, Don, remarking on that statement by the president that we'll make no distinction between terrorists who did this and those who harbor them. Do we assume that means not only bands of terrorists, but nations where they have bases?
He didn't go into any specifics, but I think that is a reasonable assumption to make if they feel they have the evidence drawing those kinds of connections. I think we may indeed see responses against nations.
Let's turn now to our diplomatic correspondent, Mike Schuster. Mike Schuster, if indeed, as the president says, the U.S. military is powerful and it is prepared and will make no distinction between terrorists who did this and those who harbor them, which nations might be worried about that at this point?
Well, obviously, Afghanistan, Robert, is number one on the list because that's where Osama bin Laden lives, and that's where his organization, al-Qaeda, maintains training camps. And it's under intense scrutiny by U.S. Satellite sensors, surveillance satellites, and other sensors that can pick up communications. Iraq would also be on that list. I'm not sure that Iraq would necessarily be second, but Iraq would be on that list, given at least some signals and hints about Iraqi involvement in the previous World Trade Center bombing. Sudan could be on that list. Sudan was hit by an American cruise missile attack in 1998, along with Afghanistan, when the two bombings occurred at U.S. embassies in Nairobi, Kenya, and in Dar es Salaam, Tanzania. The list is not very large, Robert. It's quite small, given where suspicion has fallen. I'm not sure that there are any other nations beyond that.
You mentioned the 1993 bombing of the World Trade Center. In the end, do we know what countries were involved in that act of terrorism?
No. In fact, the authorities, when they prosecuted the four and ultimately six people for that bombing, They didn't attempt to link them to nations. There were a number of terrorism experts that did feel that the Iraqi hand was perceived in that, but the Clinton administration chose not to make that connection. Over the 8 years since the first World Trade Center bombing, the view has pretty much stayed the same, that bin Laden and before him the World Trade Center bombers and Ramzi Youssef, who was believed to be the mastermind of that bombing and who's in prison now in the United States, were not acting with state sponsorship, that they were acting on their own. And the focus on bin Laden has really intensified that view, that this has been something that this has been a phenomenon that bin Laden and other independent actors have really pressed forward. I think that because of the details and the extraordinary coordination and synchronization of these acts today, it's going to push U.S. officials to focus much more on the possibility that there was state sponsorship for these acts.
Yes, it would seem that the great difference between what happened today and what happened either at the U.S. embassies or at the World Trade Center in 93 or at Khobar Towers in Saudi Arabia is that these weren't trucks full of bombs that pull up in front of the in front of a building, but hijackings that involve people obviously capable of, first of all, penetrating airport security in some way with some sort of weapons, it seems, and then piloting the aircraft into their targets. Very sophisticated stuff.
It certainly seems very sophisticated, but the number of people who actually carried out these operations today could still be small. That's what terrorism experts caution. And we don't have any information about how they got on the plane with weapons that they could then commandeer the planes, whether there were arms involved or explosives involved. So terrorism experts still caution that without further information that gives us a clearer picture of how this was done today, an ultimate conclusion can't be drawn.
It would seem from the experience of the 1993 explosion that an ultimate conclusion might not be drawn 10 years from now.
That's possible, although there was an investigation and there was a trial and there was a lot of information. And then when Ramzi Youssef was essentially kidnapped by U.S. agents from Pakistan and brought to the United States, U.S. authorities have said that he bragged about the operation and gave a good deal of detail about how he masterminded and how his people carried out the first bombing of the World Trade Center. There was also a good deal of information that's emerged about the, particularly at the trial this year, about the embassy bombings in Africa. And so I think U.S. officials believe that they will learn a great deal more about what took place today.
Thank you, Mike.
You're welcome, Robert.
Mike Schuster, NPR's diplomatic correspondent.
John Baracchini is with us. He is the executive director of the Washington office of the Monterey Institute. He's writing a book about Osama bin Laden. He's the author of a report on the first World Trade Center bombing in 1993. Mr. Baracchini, first of all, what do you think about the notion that this act was so sophisticated that it might actually have been state-sponsored?
I think it's a good point, and it's worth thinking about. We would have to say, however, that the World Trade Center bombing of 93 was a sophisticated act, or that the bombings of the embassies in two different countries, one right after another in 1998, was a sophisticated operation. There's no indication in either of those instances that states were party to that, but nothing should be ruled out at this moment.
Let's go back to what the president said. Was there anything that you felt was missing from that statement? Did you expect to hear something about retaliation or some presidential act?
I think the president and indeed other cabinet officials are striking just the right tone at this moment. Don't incite panic. Don't tip all the cards about what we might do next. Don't rule out any tools that might be in our counterterrorism toolbox. So I think they're doing pretty well under what are unprecedented circumstances.
The difficulty of not knowing what happened and not knowing who caused it leaves the United States in a sort of an impotent position, though, doesn't it, to have had something so dreadful happen and to have no response.
It leaves us impotent if we only think about one tool that is striking back And indeed, that's a feeling that many Americans, I'm sure, feel this evening. This is tragic beyond imagination, and many people are angry. But I think the president and his other officials are showing the right approach. That is, we will pick our time, we will use a variety of tools, some of them diplomatic, some of them law enforcement, some of them military, some of them things that we can do on our own here in this on our own territory, improving our security at our borders, improving the air traffic security system. There are a number of things that we can do that don't involve kissing somebody with a cruise missile.
The president said that the United States will win the war against terrorism. He talked about it as a war. Do you think, I mean, did you see this as some sort of response to the notion that, that what has happened was very close to an act of war?
That's the one aspect of the president's statement that I found unfortunate. If this is al-Qaeda and Osama bin Laden, I think they do perceive it as a war, a clash of civilizations in which they are waging a war against us. But this is not a war for us. This is not like Pearl Harbor. This was a terrorist incident. We're going to reconstitute the working ability of the Pentagon. We're going to get things back together in New York City. And we're not engaged in a war. The moment we describe it as a war, asymmetric in character, we're beginning to give Osama bin Laden or whoever this was more power than they really deserve to have. So I think we want to continue to treat this not as a war, but as a terrorist incident, even though the perpetrators of this may see it as a war. We don't want to give them that advantage.
John Barachini, thank you very much for coming in. John Barachini is the executive director of the Washington office of the Monterey Institute. He is writing a book about Osama bin Laden.
We'll be back in a moment with more coverage of today's attacks on New York and Washington, D.C. from NPR News. This is special coverage from NPR News. I'm Noah Adams.
And I'm Linda Wertheimer. We've asked Mr. John Barachini to stay with us for just a few more minutes. John Barachini is executive director of the Washington office of the Monterey Institute, and he studied acts of terror, including the 1993 bombing of the World Trade Center. Let me just ask you, if you think you know why this happened, I mean, what would be the motive behind such an incredibly serious and large attack against the United States?
It's hard to know what the motive is. And indeed, if we speculate about what the motive is, we're essentially projecting our thinking as to what we think the terrorists are thinking. It's useful to do, but let's recognize the limitations of it. With suicide bombers, it's rare that you get a chance to actually interview them, and we won't get a chance to interview these people. But in previous attacks, and particularly in the World Trade Center bombing, statements that the perpetrators of these crimes made at the end of their trial, some of the things they wrote, do give us some idea of what some of the motivations would be, and it's not a single thing. And it's not accurate to say it's all wrapped in religion. It's a variety of things. It's not only an attempt to inflict pain on the United States for its support of Israel. It's not only an attempt to revenge deaths that they feel may have resulted in the Middle East. It's also an attempt to assert their dominance as they see it over Americans. And it affirms who they are. Their sense of powerlessness they overcome by holding the lives of thousands of people in their hands and then crushing them.
In 1993, the first World Trade Center bombing, 6 people died, 1,000 were wounded, and that was bad enough. This could be horrific compared to that. The motive here could be to kill that number of people or to simply see those World Trade Towers topple.
Both. In 1993, Ramzi Yousef did say that he wanted to kill thousands. And in fact, one of the other co-conspirators in that bombing was disappointed that not more people died. This is really a mass casualty attack, and we should focus on that part of the emerging new terrorist threat, that these are people who want to inflict lots of indiscriminate, innocent casualties.
But not with very, but the means were not as sophisticated as we had feared they might be. Not biological warfare, not nuclear weapons, relatively old-fashioned forms of terrorism, hijacking a plane, a suicide bombing?
Maybe the unusual things that we've been focused on in terms of exotic weapons were not in the right weapons category. These people used an unorthodox way to render mass casualties with a conventional weapon, an airplane.
Thanks very much. John Barachini, Executive Director of the Washington Office of the Monterey Institute.